This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. If you're hiring, with Indeed, you can post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on your short list of qualified candidates using an online dashboard. Get started at Indeed.com/NPR podcast.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. CBD may be the biggest product many of you have never heard of until lately. Maybe best described as marijuana's mellower cousin, cannabidiols give you the zen, but without the THC high. There are claims that CBD can treat everything from epilepsy to autism, inflammation, and gastrointestinal disease, which is why CBD sales have been rising for several years now, and all of a sudden, it seems like it's in everything and widely available even in states where pot is illegal. CBD capsules, ointments, sprays, and edible oil, even in coffee. But does the science check out for what's poised to become a multi-billion dollar business? This hour on Point, the CBD revolution. You can join us. Have you heard of CBD or taken it? And what do you take it for? Is there huge untapped potential in this marijuana-derived compound? Or are you worried that there's little science to back up the hype? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining me first today is Amanda Chicago Lewis. She's in Los Angeles today. She's an investigative reporter for Rolling Stone and has reported extensively on the marijuana industry. We've got links to some of her reporting at onpointradio.org. Amanda, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Meghna.
So, first of all, I mean, just give us the lay of the land here. How would you describe the popularity of CBD? It feels like, you know, it may have been around for a couple of years, but all of a sudden it does seem like it's everywhere.
Yeah, CBD is for sure everywhere. It really started to hit the mainstream in 2013 when Sanjay Gupta talked about it in his famous documentary Weed that aired on CNN. And the demand based on that documentary led to a spread in the seeds, an explosion in the growth, especially beginning in 2014 after it became a little bit easier to grow hemp in the United States. And so I think after enough harvests passed and enough people became familiar with it and wanted to start their own CBD companies, now you see it everywhere.
I see. So, you know, in a couple of minutes, I want to go into detail with you and another guest that we're going to have about the sort of the chemistry and science of CBD itself. But first, tell us a little bit more about, you know, this spread that you were just talking about. When you said 2014, that was in reference to the Agriculture Act of 2014, right?
Sure, yeah. There is a farm bill that passes every couple of years in the United States. In 2014, a hemp-growing pilot program started, a lot with the support of Mitch McConnell. There's a big push in Kentucky to convert tobacco farmers over to hemp, and it's not really clear how much Mitch McConnell knew or didn't know about CBD being a product you could extract from a form of cannabis that is very, very low in THC. But essentially, this hemp pilot program in 2014, which must have been influenced by this documentary that aired in 2013, led to this explosion of people growing, quote unquote, hemp, which is really just cannabis that is less than 0.3% THC. So cannabis that doesn't get you high, but that you essentially grow like all other cannabis. It's not the hemp that looks like long fibrous stalks that you use to make rope. It's a totally different product from industrial hemp.
Yeah. Okay. So, but that 0.3% THC, you've reported that it's actually, that's somewhat of an arbitrary cutoff, right?
For sure, it's totally arbitrary. You know, I think one thing about the popularity of CBD that might be nice is that it's waking people up to the fact that the word cannabis is similar to the word dog, in that it could have a pretty huge range of expressions, right? You could see a chihuahua and you could also see a husky, and both of those are dogs. So someone described cannabis recently to me as less of a drug and more of a drug development toolkit. And I liked that phrasing a lot because it helps talk about the fact that what we think of as marijuana, one thing that gets you high, always the same plant, is in fact sort of a black box of compounds, yeah, that you could breed in and out. THC and CBD are only two of many compounds.
Yeah. You know, Amanda, maybe I should have very first off asked you, have you tried CBD?
I'm on some right now.
You are, okay. And and what form are you taking it in?
A little bit of, you know, flour, a little bit of oil. I don't know. What have I had in my system in the last 12 hours? Okay. It's pretty early here in LA.
I mean, I'm just curious, like, why are you taking it and what effect does it have on you?
Sure. So me personally, I'm recovering from a concussion and CBD has been found to be a neuroprotectant and it sort of helps my brain stabilize in a time when I've been recovering from this head injury. But it's also good, you know, for people with anxiety. It's good for people to focus. People use it for all sorts of things. And I know you were saying really about the science and what do we know? It's all anecdotal evidence. But, you know, the truth is over 90% of Americans believe that medical marijuana should be legal. And that's really more of a reference to THC dominant plants. And the reason why more than 90% of Americans think it should be legal is because they've seen themselves the effects of that on people that they know. And that's all anecdotal evidence. And we haven't been able to do real research on it. So, you know, it's the kind of thing where your friend is going to have some CBD and they're going to feel a powerful effect and then they're going to tell you about it. And it's going to spread that way. And I think that's how it's been happening.
Yeah. So the claims, though, it's interesting because there is some science behind a particular use for CBD. And we'll get to that in a minute. But then there are these, as you're saying, this broad sweep of claims about ailments that it could have a positive effect on. And I just want to play some of the like promotional advertising around CBD. This is one that we found for a CBD beverage enhancer. The ad claims that you just put a few drops in the beverage of your choice and hey, tons of promised health benefits.
It's literally the one product that everyone should use every day. It goes beyond just CBD. With more antioxidant potency than vitamin C or E, more anti-inflammatory properties than some of the most powerful superfoods, and more neuroprotective benefits than many brain-boosting foods, not to mention the perfect balance of omegas 3, 6, and 9. Did you know cannabinoids naturally occur in breast milk? And we all know how nutritionally important that is.
So that's an ad for CBD or cannabidiols. I'm speaking today with Amanda Chicago Lewis. She's an investigative reporter for Rolling Stone and has reported extensively on the marijuana industry. And we're really exploring this CBD phenomenon and the claims and the science and why it is that it seems like so many people are taking it right now. So, Amanda, hang on here for just a second because I want to bring into the conversation Dr. Kevin Hill. He's director of addiction psychiatry at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. And he's also author of Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. Dr. Hill, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me back, Megna.
So we just heard this ad for a lot of claims about what CBD is capable of. More antioxidant potency than vitamin C or E, anti-inflammatory properties, more neuroprotective than superfoods. It sounds like quite a compound.
It is quite a compound. I mean, it's an extremely promising compound, but we really need to be clear about where the level of research is. So there is a difference between preclinical or animal research and randomized clinical trials where thousands of patients have used a medicine so it could be studied properly. And so with cannabidiol, CBD, we really only have very, very strong evidence for a couple of conditions, whereas unfortunately we've got people using it for myriad conditions at this point.
Okay, so let's talk about those conditions where we do have seeming, more solid science. Epilepsy seems to be one of them.
Yes. So epilepsy, there was a cannabidiol compound developed by a drug company that was just approved by the FDA. So in order to get an FDA approval, you need to have multiple positive extensive trials. And so that has been done. And so now we have a cannabidiol approved for two pediatric epilepsy conditions, Dravet syndrome and Lennox-Gastaut. So that's a very important development which could affect the scheduling of cannabidiol, which is another issue.
Okay. But Amanda, let me jump back to you here because for that drug that has been FDA approved, the FDA commissioner has said that the agency supports research on cannabis-derived products but also warns against the use of CBD for unproven medical claims. That's almost an aside. But for this FDA-approved drug, though, there's a problem, right? Because CBD itself is still classified by the DEA as a Schedule I drug. Is that right?
Well, sort of. It's incredibly complicated.
Okay. Help us understand the complexity then.
I mean, essentially, I think the DEA is sort of is waiting for the FDA to make a move on this. You know, each government, each federal agency is sort of making its own decisions about cannabis at this point. So everyone's sort of operating independently. I think the best language to use about whether CBD, the compound isolated by itself, is federally legal is that it is not explicitly legal to use or sell. But essentially, so many people are breaking that law. Congress people have spoken publicly about breaking that law and using CBD. The former, you know, a former top person at the DEA had said if their child had intractable seizures, they would give their child CBD. So it's a law that is not exactly precise because it's been challenged through various legal arguments recently and certainly is going to change at the end of the month when the newest farm bill passes, which has explicit language that will legalize CBD and essentially every other compound in cannabis except for THC.
I see. Okay, so Dr. Hill, I was just going to ask you that does maybe Amanda answered the question I was about to ask about this company that has the FDA-approved sure. CBD drug. They were stuck between a rock and a hard place in terms of CBD's legality. But is that problem solved with the new farm bill?
It may ultimately be solved. But at this point, I do think it's clear to point out, you know, it's important to point out that it's federally illegal right now, this substance. And it is a Schedule I substance. I'm not saying that it should be, but it is Schedule I. I do believe that because this product, Epidiolex, has FDA approval, that the DEA must reschedule it. And so they probably will. They'll either make it Schedule 2, perhaps, or they might put it into its own schedule. But that has to happen. But as of today, it still is illegal.
Okay. But what about all these other ailments that people say they're taking CBD for? Gastrointestinal issues, as an anti-inflammatory, for depression, for, you know, all sorts of things. The list seems really long.
It's quite a long list. And so patients come in to me all the time using cannabidiol for a whole host of things. And I can understand their approach, right? They've tried a bunch of other things and those other approaches haven't worked. So they're looking for something. But at this point, I would worry about occasions where people are using cannabidiol in lieu of other treatments that we know more about that have been studied in a more rigorous way.
All right, well, we'll pick up that thought when we come back. We're talking about CBD and how all of a sudden it seems like it's everywhere, from pills to oils to we're talking about an FDA-approved drug, and you can even get it as a dropper to add to your coffee. Do you take CBD? Has it worked for you? Or are you concerned that we're not quite there yet with all the science? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel Alarcón, host of NPR's Spanish language podcast, Radio Ambulante. We tell engaging, one-of-a-kind stories that give you a more nuanced sense of Latin America and the U.S. Latino community today. From events that are changing the political landscape to intimate stories about everyday people. Listen to Radio Ambulante on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about CBD or cannabidiols, and they're a compound that's derived from hemp or marijuana. But the hemp-derived compound seems to be growing in popularity because people claim it produces a lot of health effects without the THC high. So we're taking a look at the truth about that and the legal questions around CBD this hour. I'm joined by Amanda Chicago Lewis. She's an investigative reporter for Rolling Stone magazine, and she's reported extensively on the marijuana industry. Also with us is Dr. Kevin Hill. He's Director of Addiction Psychiatry at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and author of Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. Now, let's hear a couple of clips here that describe the range of reasons why more and more people are taking CBD these days. First of all, you're going to hear Canadian mother Sarah Wilkinson. She told CBC News in Canada in 2016 that she has a daughter with severe epilepsy who showed positive results right after taking or beginning to take CBD. And her daughter stopped experiencing seizures by eliminating all the other medications that she was taking and taking only CBD every day.
She's getting codeine and morphine for pain and, you know, all, you know, three different benzodiazepines and then throw in a barbiturate and, you know, ketamine when she's in hospital or propofol, which is what Michael Jackson overdosed on. I mean, it's just look at those drugs and, you know, tell them to go smoke a joint and then, you know, go take any one of the pills that she, you know, was on. And just one of them. And she was in combinations of, you know, six or seven. So it's just, it's a no-brainer.
So a Canadian mother there saying CBD has helped her severely epileptic daughter. All the way from that, all the way to New York-based wellness blogger Jules Hunt, who told CBS This Morning, or a little earlier this year, about the sort of general positive health effects she's experienced with CBD.
I think you start to feel the benefits over time, and then you realize, oh, wow, I slept a lot better that evening. I didn't wake up in a panic thinking about my long to-do list for the next day.
Dr. Kevin Hill, let me ask you a quick question here. I suppose with any new compound or newish compound that it's experiencing this explosive growth in popularity, I always wonder about whether or not some of the, you know, we were talking about epilepsy before, so that aside, but when people are talking about broader general health effects, is it placebo here? Because, I mean, I'm looking at a quote from Jeff Chen, who's the director of the UCLA Cannabis Research Initiative, saying that we are still trying to understand what is happening, why it's happening, or even if it's a true phenomenon versus placebo.
I think there may be some placebo effect involved here, but I also want to emphasize I'm very, very excited about cannabidiol. There are many conditions for which there is strong preclinical evidence, and that leads the way to additional clinical trials. But importantly, there are things that we don't know about it. We don't know the chronic effects of cannabidiol use. We don't know the interactions it may have with other drugs that people may be taking. And so there's a dire need for research. I think it's critical for people who are profiting on, you know, from the cannabis industry to bear some of that responsibility for funding. It's better to get answers than to continue to have people take CBD for conditions that we really don't know much about at this point.
Yeah. Amanda Chicago-Lewis, your thought on that?
Yeah, I just want to say with all this cautionary science being thrown around that the World Health Organization has found that CBD is safe in any amount. So, yes, we direly need more research, but it's also a generally safe thing to be taking. And the biggest issue is probably the lack of regulation. So, like other supplements in the U.S., you don't really know what you're actually getting in because it hasn't been tested. So you might be buying something that says CBD and it doesn't actually have CBD in it.
Yeah, so just to clarify what the WHO said, I was asked to be at that meeting and I presented to the Expert Committee on Drug Dependence. And so they're also very, very optimistic about cannabidiol. And what they said was that it should not be scheduled and therefore opening the door to that level of research that I was alluding to. They also pointed out that, again, for epilepsy, evidence is very, very strong. For other conditions, it really isn't as strong at this point. So there's a critical need for more work to be done in this area.
So not be not be scheduled meaning what exactly?
So for example, in the United States, it should not be a Schedule I substance because there are so many barriers to the research that we're talking about. And the research can be done currently, but it's very difficult to do.
Right. And so to Amanda's point about the other problem being that because it's not regulated right now, you can't be fully confident about the quality of the CBD that you're buying?
Absolutely. That's entirely true. In fact, there was a paper that came out last year in the Journal of American Medical Association written by one of the experts in this area, Marcel Bon Miller, who's at Jefferson. And he found that up to 70% of CBD products were mislabeled. And that means that there was either more CBD in the product than there was supposed to be or less. So at the end of the day, if you're buying something online or you're buying it sometimes at a dispensary, given the standards of testing, it's hard to know what you're getting. And also important, if you are taking these products, I would say I would implore you to talk about it with your physician. They need to know what you're taking.
Yeah. We are talking about cannabidiols or CBD. And let's go to Eric, who is calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico. You're on the air, Eric.
Hi. Thank you for allowing me to share my experience. I'm 60 years old, and I used marijuana habitually for over 40 years. I quit for 5 years, had a terrible tooth problem. I needed to travel. And so I decided to try a CBD oil, and it actually worked. It worked for my tooth, and I was not in any way affected as you know, relapsing with using marijuana. And I would say that in my personal experience, it was very beneficial.
Hmm. Well, Eric, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to David, who's calling from Chicago, Illinois. You're on the air, David.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to piggyback on something the doctor said, which is that it's difficult to study marijuana and cannabinoids. And the reason for that is the government policy, which has been in place for over 40 years. My personal experience with cannabidiol was using it after a traumatic brain injury like your other guest, and also for a rare nerve compression syndrome in my neck. And I had tried 4 or 5 different muscle relaxants. I probably tried 8 or 9 different other pharmaceuticals, and it was the first supplement or drug or whatever that helped my neck, and it also decreased some of the symptoms I was having from the brain injury. So I just wanted to share that I think that there's good evidence out there anecdotally that it works, and one of the reasons that it's not studied is because of government policy.
Yeah. Well, David, thank you so much for your call. Amanda, let me turn back to you on that. With this farm bill, as you were saying earlier, that would change how the government views CBD specifically, is the concern about preventing its research alleviated?
A little bit, yeah. Research will be a lot easier. We'll be able to, you know, maximize production of CBD and all of these other compounds that have similar 3-letter or 4-letter names that have all kinds of promising medical potential. And we'll be able to do more research about that pretty soon. So hopefully in 5 years, we won't really have these questions.
Okay. Dr. Hill, your thought on that?
Well, I think, as Eric mentioned, I think there are many areas where cannabidiol has particular promise. And so for those people who are addicted to cannabis, so there are a subset of folks, about 10%, who use cannabis every day to the detriment of their work, school, or relationships, cannabidiol may be a way for them to stop using cannabis. It may occupy some of the cannabinoid receptors or affect the cannabinoid receptors in such a way that they could stop. Similarly, I think Amanda mentioned at the top, and David as well, that there are animal studies that show that cannabidiol is neuroprotective. So in those ways, I think there are, you know, there's a lot of promise, and again, underscores the need for science done in the right way.
Yeah. Well, let's bring another voice in here, because another part of this story is the explosive growth of the sales in CBD over the past couple of years. So I want to turn now to Julie Nardi. She's joining us from Columbus, Missouri. She's a buyer and salesperson. Excuse me, a buyer and salesperson at Clover's Natural Market, and her store has been selling CBD products for a little over a year now. Julie Nardi, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Magda. Thanks for having me. Also, it's Columbia, Missouri, not Columbus.
My fault. I'm
That's
so
okay.
Sorry. We try our hardest to get our facts and places right.
That's
here. So
totally fine.
Real time fact checking is the best. So thank you so much. So let me just ask you: you've been selling CBD products for a little over a year now. What made you decide to get into the business?
Well, our owner is extremely, we aren't corporately owned. We're a locally owned health food store here in Columbia. And our owner, she is on the cutting edge as far as what supplements are going on out there. And we decided to bring it in because we thought that it was a good product. We thought that it could help a lot of people. And we were right. We have a lot of people coming in for a myriad of issues. And I can't tell you how many people come in that have a friend or a relative that has tried it. I'm totally in agreement with Amanda on this. It's something that has so much anecdotal power, and I've never seen something explode like this, where we have people every day that are new customers that come in that want to try it because they've heard about it.
New customers who hadn't previously shopped at the store?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so what kinds of things are they coming in to get help with?
We see a lot of veterans that are dealing with either pain or PTSD, people in general that want to deal with pain, but they don't want to take prescriptions and have side effects with that, insomnia, anxiety, fibromyalgia, MS. I mean, it goes on and on. We have a lot of people that take it for their pets, too. We have a lot of vets in town that recommend it for pets, too.
Pets, too. Okay, Dr. Hill, let me just turn back to you quickly. Animal uses for CBD?
I think that you can extrapolate and perhaps think that it's going to have some similar effects upon animals. And I know that some people do give it to their pets.
Okay. And so, Julie, has this become a really big seller for the store?
Definitely, definitely. I've been in health food for 17 years. And usually when we get, like, quote-unquote, new or trendy supplements like this, they're like a flash in the pan. I mean, whenever Dr. Oz would do shows, things would last for about a month or so. This is totally different. I have never seen something like this. And like I said, we have new people come in all the time looking for this stuff. And it just, I think the anecdotal evidence out there, people are sharing their experiences. And these are like older people, grandmas, the nice lady that lives across the street, your teacher. These are regular people that come in for this stuff. They are just looking for options that don't have side effects.
Well, I think you said this a little bit earlier, but I just want to underscore it. Are a lot of people coming in because this is a way for them to experience what they believe the health effects are from marijuana-derived products without the high?
I don't even know if they... they kind of connect it to marijuana.
I
think most people are really, I mean, the majority of the people that I have talked to are really looking just for help without having to take a prescription. And so they don't even really correlate it to marijuana. I think they just look at it as like a standalone product.
Okay. Amanda Chicago-Lewis, let me turn back to you for a second. I mean, how large is the CBD market right now?
It's pretty big. I mean, it's impossible to measure since it's so unregulated, but we know that something like $800 million worth of hemp products were sold in the United States last year. How much of that was CBD? It's sort of hard to say. How much came from dispensaries? It's sort of complicated. But I would also just say that, you know, we're talking about how could it be good for all of these different ailments, but think about Tylenol. Think about opioids. How many different conditions, how many different problems does your doctor say, let me give you some opioids for.
Well, I mean, the opioid example, though, is the cautionary tale. They shouldn't have been
sure,
saying that.
Sure, but that's because... Right, but that's because it's a powerful pain reliever, and the fact that it's very addictive is a problem. CBD is not that level of addictive at all. Yeah. So I just think in theory, if we're talking about something that's a powerful anti-inflammatory or something that helps people with pain, like, yeah, you get pain medicines that people take for a lot of different reasons.
We're talking about CBDs this hour, and I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point. Go ahead, Amanda. Sorry about that.
I was going to ask Julie whether she'd had any problems with law enforcement, because independent health food stores like hers have been experiencing this kind of confusion around the legality. I know, you know, earlier in the hour, I was saying it's not explicitly legal, and the doctor was saying it's Schedule 1. There's actually, you know, real confusion and debate over that. Like, reasonable legal minds disagree. And so was curious if Julie, like many other health food stores around the country, has seen a local police raid or, you know, intermittent problems like that.
Yeah. You know, we haven't. Luckily, we're really fortunate in that. Columbia is a pretty liberal town. We're a college town. There have been other places in Missouri where issues like that have come up. And it, like you said earlier, it's so complicated and it's such a gray area. But at this point, we feel like the people that shop here, it's worth the risk, basically. We want to help people, and that's really why we have it.
Yeah, well, to Amanda's point, though, there have been stores that have been raided by local law enforcement. I think the DEA overall, the federal level, says that, you know, even given the legal complexities around CBD, they're really focused on opioids. So if there's enforcement happening, it's happening at the local level. And in May of 2017, in Bismarck, North Dakota, the police department, their narcotics unit actually raided two health food stores and confiscated their CBD products. I mean, here's part of a report that evening on the CBS affiliate there.
Terry's Health Products says officers told them that CBD became a Schedule 1 drug under North Dakota law in December. A spokeswoman for the store says they were told officers would be testing for both CBD and THC in their products. If found positive for either, the store could be charged with distributing a Schedule 1 drug. The Class B felony could be punishable by up to 20 years in jail.
So, Julie Nardi, that hasn't happened to you yet.
No.
Is it a concern, though, as maybe you expand sales?
Oh, yeah. I mean, definitely. And we are trying as hard as we can to do everything under, you know, under all the ways that we should be doing it. We're making sure that we're up on all of the legal laws. You know, it's not like we're trying to do this under the table or anything like that.
Well, Julie Nardi, joining us from Columbia, Missouri, buyer and salesperson at Clover's Natural Market there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Kevin Hill, I want to come back to you here. I mean, you've heard sort of a local seller there, and Amanda bringing up the important issue about law enforcement around this. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think Amanda mentioned, you know, Tylenol and opioids as in a comparison to cannabidiol, and she pointed out correctly that, that opioids are addictive and therefore dangerous. Tylenol is a very powerful pain reliever. It's not addictive, but it is very, very dangerous. And so that's why I would say I think we need to pump the brakes just a tad here with cannabidiol. My worry is that health food stores are making claims that really aren't backed by the level of science that they really need to. For example, the cannabidiol creams that they're selling, in many ways, I mean, there isn't really the rigorous evidence that suggests that they're any better than things that you can buy over the counter like Bengay. And so people are paying exorbitant prices. My patients come in, they're paying ridiculous prices for creams that are supposed to, you know, provide tremendous pain relief, and they're really just local anesthetics in many ways.
And when you're saying that Tylenol is dangerous, dangerous when taken irresponsibly.
Yeah. And so there are many, many patients who have significant liver problems when they're unwittingly taking far, far more Tylenol than they anticipate. So we really don't know the extent of the risk here with cannabidiol at this point.
Yeah. Well, you know, nevertheless, that market is growing. I'm seeing a couple of reports here from cannabis industry consulting groups that say that by, you know, 2020 or 2022, the CBD market could be anywhere from $2 to $20 billion. So we'll keep exploring this when we come back. Amanda Chicago Lewis and Dr. Kevin Hill, stand by. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
This message comes from NPR's sponsor, Indeed. When it comes to hiring, you don't have time to waste. You need help getting to your short list of qualified candidates fast. With Indeed, post a job in minutes, set up screener questions, then zero in on qualified candidates. And when you need to hire fast, accelerate your results with sponsored jobs. New users can try for free when you sign up at Indeed.com/NPR podcast. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Hi, this is Peter Sagal. For 20 years, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me has been making fun of the news with comedians and celebrity guests. We got silly limericks. We got terrible impressions. If you think the news is a joke, wait till you hear our show. New podcast episodes are available every Saturday.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about CBD or cannabidiols and their explosive growth in the United States, and how you can find them suddenly, it seems like, from in everything from creams to coffee, and the fact that a lot of people are using them and saying that they're getting great medical relief from these CBDs. I'm joined today by Amanda Chicago Lewis. She's an investigative reporter for Rolling Stone magazine, has covered the marijuana industry extensively. Also with us is Dr. Kevin Hill, Director of Addiction Psychiatry at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and author of Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth About the World's Most Popular Weed. I just want to get a couple of calls in here because lots of folks have some thoughts or questions about CBD. So let's go to Carla, who's calling from Ipswich, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Carla.
Hi, my name's Carla. I work at Cape Ann Botanicals. We're a store that focuses specifically on CBD products. And I just have a couple of comments about, you know, it's really important to vet your products. And we spend a lot of time reviewing all of the products that we bring into our store because we know, you know, for lack of a better word, there's a lot of snake oil out there. And people bring in products that they're buying online and they're like, I've been taking this. And we look at it and we say, I don't even know what this, like, it's not clearly stated on the label what's in there. So, you know, it's just really important to keep an eye out on what you're actually purchasing.
Yeah.
And the one piece that we see that's really missing from the industry is real sort of medical professionals weighing in, because we have a registered nurse on staff. He had been a pediatric nurse for 25 years in California. And that's been really interesting because what's happening is people are terrified to be high, but they've also exhausted a lot of the options at the doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
So they come in and they're just desperate to feel better and they're scared to get high. So we tell everybody, and we've been really upfront with the local police chief, our local town officials, that we're not a pot shop.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of success because people, you know, we've been really upfront about what we do. And
well,
and,
Carla, just let me jump in here because I really appreciate your, the two observations that you're bringing to the table. And thank you so much. Dr. Kevin Hill, to Carla's point there about people using CBD as a last resort because they've tried so many other things with their doctors and it hasn't worked. What do you think about that?
I think that happens quite a bit. And I can appreciate that and I understand it. My hope would be that if you feel like you're working your way through first, second, third line treatments, that you're continuing to have a collaboration with your doctor about it. Should you decide to go on cannabidiol, I think you should have a talk with your doctor about it because ultimately, again, with there's so many unknowns with cannabidiol, your physician needs to know everything that you're taking. And unfortunately, that isn't the case oftentimes.
Mm. And I'm seeing a statement here from FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb, who has said that the FDA remains concerned about the proliferation and illegal marketing of unapproved CBD-containing products with unproven medical claims. And by the way, the FDA adds that CBD technically cannot be sold in dietary supplements or added to food that's being sold in between states. So it's all very complicated. But let's take some more calls here. Chuck is calling from Brandon, Florida. You're on the air, Chuck.
Thanks for taking my call. Just a comment. I do use CBD oil. I started using it only 2 weeks ago. I fell, broke my hip riding my bicycle about a year and a half, 2 years ago. I'm 82 years old. I'll be 83 this November. My pain, in treatment of my broken hip, which was repaired okay, but I developed pain after about 6 months to a year. Went to a pain doctor, and he prescribed oxycodone and a few other things. Gabapentin was one of them. And that relieved the pain quite a bit, but as soon as I went off the medication, when the time ran out for it, after a month and a half or so, the pain returned.
Yeah.
So I still had the pain. I did not want to go back on that kind of medication. I take enough medications now for my heart and other problems.
So
I don't need more medication.
But CBD has worked for you?
So far, well, like I said, I only started it 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
When I got off my painkillers, I went on Tylenol. My wife suggested that I go on Tylenol. Well, that seemed to help, although I still had a lot of pain. I was able to withstand it.
Hey,
but now became very worried about Tylenol in my liver.
Chuck, if I may, just thank you so much for your call. And, you know, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I think one of the things that I'm hearing from your story is that lots of people have long medical journeys, trying lots of different things before they arrive at CBD, which is really interesting. I mean, Amanda Chicago Lewis, we've heard several callers already say this. Does that match up with, you know, the people you talked to with your reporting?
It does. And look, I agree with Dr. Hill in principle, but the truth is, like, doctors aren't educated about cannabidiol. They aren't really educated about the cannabis plant. This isn't something that gets talked about in medical school. It's a new frontier of research for sure. And ultimately, should we pump the brakes on what's happening with CBD? I'm not a doctor. I'm a realist. This isn't going away. And the problem has really been the policy and not the research, because the policy is holding up the research. The policy is the reason why we have creams that Dr. Hill's patients are using that don't seem to have actual CBD in them, right? The policy is causing this inconsistent law enforcement application, which ultimately has, you know, disproportionate effect on people of color and people in vulnerable populations. So, you know, we can talk about the science all day long and what's there and what's not there, but the thing that's really got to change is federal policy.
Dr. Hill, what do you say?
I agree. I think that the policy needs to change. In so many ways with cannabis, the policy is ahead of the science. And in this way, you know, the reverse may be true. And so, you know, I've been advocating for years, and people who do work in this area have been advocating for years that cannabidiol should be rescheduled, that perhaps cannabis should be rescheduled, and it hasn't happened. The level of research isn't where it needs to be. But again, being somebody who treats patients every day, I am worried. You know, somebody like Chuck says that, you know, he's trying something, he's tried other medications. You know, you worry about the level of follow-up necessary. You worry about the unknowns with cannabidiol. And so my hope would be, as I've said a couple of times here, that if you're going to try something like this, that you're letting your doctor know so that you can work on this together.
But Dr. Hill, to Amanda's point about she's being a realist, that CBD sales and availability is just growing. I mean, we're also seeing stories, and Amanda, maybe you can just chime in here, but we're seeing stories about, you know, giant companies like Coca-Cola considering, like, you know, if it becomes widely available and you know, fully legal, quote unquote, fully legal, you know, they might want to put CBD in health and wellness drinks that they sell.
Well, I would say to Coca-Cola, go ahead and do that. But if you're going to do that, if you're going to profit from this area, then you have a responsibility to move the science forward. And that's something that really hasn't happened in Massachusetts and other places. That, again, we've got so many companies profiting wildly from the cannabis industry, from cannabidiol, and those folks are not contributing, by and large, to the research that we're talking about. And that really needs to happen.
Amanda?
Look, I just want to clear up a really big misconception about the cannabis industry in general, which is that people are profiting wildly. It's actually not very profitable to run a cannabis business unless you're doing so illegally, right? Because if you're running a illicit market cannabis business, you're not paying taxes. You know, there's a bunch of benefits there for you financially. But people who are running legal cannabis businesses pay, you know, double the taxes of a regular business because they're not allowed to take deductions on their taxes because it's a Schedule I drug, right? They're not allowed to use the banking system because that's regulated and insured by federal law, and that can be a really huge problem. And, you know, it's just, it's not as profitable as people think it is.
But on the other hand, I mean, yeah, point taken, especially for smaller businesses, but I mean, as we're speaking more broadly about...
Oh, no, Coca-Cola, please pay for research. Let's
do
that.
And I mean, and great. we've got venture capital funds and all sorts of investors lining up with lots of money to, they want to enter this business. I've heard it called a green wave beforehand. So,
right. But they're not going to pay for... Coca-Cola is not going to pay for cancer research. Coca-Cola, which is, you know, what we need. Coca-Cola is going to pay for, you know, how do we figure out how to get your body to absorb cannabis faster so that when you drink it in a beverage, you feel it in 15 minutes instead of in an hour and a half. That's what Coca-Cola is going to pay for if, you know, they put money into this, which, again, they have not yet.
Coca-Cola could be made to fund that research, though. And again, I know many, many companies that are local and national that are making, they're printing money in this area. And my worry is that they're doing it based upon clinical claims that really are not backed on science, unfortunately. And they're profiting on the backs of desperate patients oftentimes. I mean, there's a company right down the street here that's doing that. And so, you know, they're very, very glossy menus that say, our patients report that, you know, this cannabis works in this way and it's, and CBD is work, you know, helpful in this way. And that's the kind of thing that worries me. And absolutely, companies that are in this area should be held to contributing to the research that people need to do.
But Dr. Hill, haven't we had this problem, you know, ad infinitum with any kind of dietary supplements that makes all sorts of claims for the health effects that it quote unquote supports? I mean,
yes,
it's an old story.
It is an old story. But so should we just continue to let that happen? Should we let unregulated areas continue to grow, or should we bring them into the light and try to do this the right way?
Well, let's get a couple more calls here. Let's go to Gavin, who's calling from Baltimore, Maryland. You're on the air, Gavin.
Hi, Gavin from Baltimore. I'm a vet, and I was able to use CBD to come off of opiates I was taking for pain. And a couple of years ago, I had a surgery on my knee, and I used cannabis as well to not become addicted to opiates when they gave me oxycodone. I did like a 2-day-on, 1-day-off regimen. So,
wow. So it sounds like it's working for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm lucky enough that my wife works at a dispensary up in Towson, Towson, Maryland, Urban Legends. I also have been able to try cannabidiol, which is not as well known of a cannabinoid, CBN, and that works really well for insomnia. I've got some pancreatitis and some liver problems, so it also seems to have a little bit less of an effect on the liver, but all in all, it's working pretty well for me.
Yeah. Well, Gavin, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Hill, I mean, Gavin's brought up something I'm curious to hear your thoughts about, he didn't want to take oxycodone because obviously there are huge concerns around addiction there. And I've been reading that other people are saying that CBD has even allowed them to help deal with addictions they may have with other drugs.
Yes. So we talked about that earlier. Yeah. I believe it was Eric earlier in the show mentioned that there is promise in that area. So there may be ultimately studies that show cannabidiol to be helpful to help people get off of opioids. Certainly there is a growing body of research that suggests that cannabis itself can be a replacement for prescribed opioids. So I think it's a very promising area, and you just want to see the level of rigorous research done before millions of people do these things.
Well, Sharon is calling.
Go ahead, Amanda.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say about that's very important research that we look into whether CBD can help people get off of opioids. And you mentioned Jeff Chen, who runs the UCLA Cannabis Initiative earlier in the hour. He has been trying to raise money to do that research. They're completely ready to go. They just need a little bit more money. So really, that's what's, you know, holding us up. People are eager to do this research.
Yeah. Let's go to Sharon, who's calling from Ravenna, Ohio. You're on the air, Sharon.
Yes, hi. I was interested in, I had read within the last couple of years some interesting reports of that certain marijuana compounds, I'm not sure if it's CBD or exactly what, reverse Alzheimer's in Petri dishes, undid the tangles. And I'm really thinking about taking it. I have a family history of Alzheimer's. My mother, my grandmother, my mother's twin sister all had Alzheimer's. What do they know about that research going on right now?
Sharon, thanks for your call. Dr. Hill?
Sharon's right. So there are animal studies, studies done in cell lines that show promise for cannabidiol in treatment of Alzheimer's. And so particularly in an area like Alzheimer's where there are not effective treatments, I think it's legitimate. If you're, you know, sitting with your physician and you have talked about this and have perhaps tried other ways or thought about how to prevent Alzheimer's from occurring, or if you have symptoms, I think it's a possible thing to do. It wouldn't be a first-line treatment for me, but I think that it's something that, again, holds a lot of promise. I mean, I think that's the theme here.
Yeah. You know, so this hour we've talked about sort of all the questions around the science of CBD. We've talked about the policy challenges with CBD. Amanda Chicago-Lewis, I also want to just get your take on the cultural moment that we're in, right? I'm looking at here, for example, at the Washington Post. There was an article in the Post that said, you know, maybe there's a cultural reason for CBD's sudden popularity. And this is the quote from the Post. It's, "For generation anxious, affixed to its phones and stricken by news alerts, overworked and underrested, the mysterious substance known as CBD is quickly becoming the new it drug." What do you think about that?
I mean, yes and no. We are absolutely living through a moment of wellness obsession, right? A lot of people are afraid that the planet isn't going to survive very much longer. A lot of people are afraid that the democracy is not going to survive very much longer. You know, everyone is obsessed with health in ways that, you know, we maybe weren't 20 years ago. And so CBD speaks to that in a lot of different ways. But at the same time, you can't really group it in with something like crystals or astrology or some of the other things that have become more trendy, especially among millennials like myself, because, you know, it is a medicine, it is a drug, and, you know, we've got research preliminarily going back decades showing this as something promising, but we haven't been able to look into it more. And it's really only the beginning of the legalization of cannabis that has brought CBD to the fore.
Yeah.
So it's both a circumstantial thing with the times, and it is very much hitting on something a lot of people are interested in right now, which is, I think, a feeling of calm. And that's really, you know, the biggest effect that most people who don't have a major medical issue get when they try actual CBD.
So Dr. Kevin Hill, about 30 seconds to go. Last thought goes to you.
Well, I think it ultimately is a risk-benefit conversation. With cannabidiol, the benefits probably outweigh the risks. I mean, it's not going to hurt you more than likely. It may hurt your wallet, I think, in some cases. But overall, I think it's probably a positive development that we're making progress in this area. I hope that the rate of progress increases at this point.
Yeah. You know, I have to say that in discussing a drug that brings on, or a compound that brings on a feeling of calm, I have been rather invigorated by this hour. So Dr. Kevin Hill, Director of Addiction Psychiatry at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and author of Marijuana, The Unbiased Truth about the world's most popular weed. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Amanda Chicago Lewis, investigative reporter for Rolling Stone magazine, who has reported extensively on the marijuana industry. Got lots of links to her reporting at onpointradio.org. Amanda, thank you so very much. It was really great to have you.
Thank you.
And listeners, keep your comments and your experiences and your stories and questions about CBD coming. Go to onpointradio.org to do that, or Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.